Hey, it's Chuck Armstrong with Loudwire Nights, and this is Loudwire Nights On Demand. Man, I don't know what else to say other than we got to hang out with an original Sex Pistol, Glenn Matlock. This interview aired on Wednesday, June 24th. Here we go. Well, this is truly an honor to welcome tonight's special guest to the show. He has been part of a lot of rock and roll over the years, working with The Damned, with Iggy Pop, with Rich Kids, with his own solo band, and perhaps most incredible, he was an original Sex Pistol. Glenn Matlock, man, thank you so much for hanging with us tonight.
Hi, Chuck. How you doing? All right.
I'm good. It's an honor to have you on the show, man, and to be talking about this brand new documentary chronicling your history in rock and roll and your time with the Sex Pistols. It's called I Was a Teenage Sex Pistol. How's it feel to have this out and the world watching?
It's kind of good. It's so weird. It's based on a book I wrote a long time ago. I can't even remember, like 1986, 87 or something like that. And it was in the back of my mind, I thought it would make a good documentary with a different slant to the story, which, you know, everybody in a band's got a different side of looking at things. I felt mine had been passed over a little bit, which is why I wrote the book, and I found it very cathartic. And I think if I hadn't done that, that wouldn't have led to us reforming the original band in 96. But one of the main reasons I wrote the book is because I got so fed up with being asked about it. I thought, I'll write a book, I'll never have to talk about it again. But then, as soon as you write a book, everybody wants to know why you wrote the book, so you off you go talking about it again, and then you finally make a documentary, and they want to know why you made a documentary. So there's no escape. But there you go. I'll take it with a good spirit.
That's it, man. Yeah, well, yeah, the story's been told by a lot of different people, and yeah, you told it in your book. But a documentary is different, right? It's and especially because it's been a few decades since you released that book. Was it difficult to do the documentary, or were you ready for it?
Well, I don't know. It took a while. I wasn't that mad, not mad keen to do it. But over the years, I'd met a few people who run with it for a bit, and it didn't work out for one reason or another, and you ditch it. And then you meet somebody, you go, how about doing this? And then I finally met, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, I met a guy called Nick Mead, who's one of the co-directors and producers on it. And we did a little bit. And then he met Andre Rellis maybe a year and a half, 2 years ago now. And he was keen to make it, so we did it. And the funny thing is, you know, all comes to him, to he who waits, they say. And it's now it's taken so long, it's coincided with 50 years of the Pistols, you know. But even the 50 years is a movable feast, is it, from the first gig, first time we met? The last time we, you know, it's like, yeah, but there you go. But it's good to have it out. And what I'm pleased with is the quantity and the caliber of people who've stepped up to big me up, you know, in the movie, and then people I've worked with over the years or have acquaintances, you know, Glenn Burke and Debbie Harry, because I was playing with Blondie over the last few years. Even Kenny Jones from The Faces, I did a little stint with a version of them, which was my all-time favourite band, and that was the band. We didn't do many gigs, but we did headline the Fuji Festival in Japan in front of 50,000 people, and it was the band I used to stand in front of the mirror when I was 14, pretending I was Ronnie Lane, you know. So, yeah, I've been quite blessed with things, and it's been up and down, but there you go. You
know. It's amazing, man. Well, yeah, I mean, you talk about the caliber of people, and yeah, I mean, it's amazing. You mentioned Debbie Harry and, you know, Billy Idol's in there and Fat Mike's in there. Were you surprised that, you know, all these people stepped up and were part of it?
Well, I was pleased. I wasn't surprised, but I guess so. I'm not being funny. I've been around a little bit.
You know, there's a few people
I did ask, I won't say who, but, you know, like in the Pistols kind of world and the John Lydon world and stuff, there's people we both know, but some might be a bit more affiliated with John, and they didn't want to tread on his toes maybe and didn't want to do it because of that reason. But, you know, there's more than enough people that they're bigging me up. So good for you. And they did it all for not much more than a cup of coffee and a sticky bum, you know. So
sometimes that's all it takes, man.
Yeah. There you go.
Well, and you know, the story of the Pistols, man, it's, you talk about 50 years, it's, you know, rooted in 70s Britain, and, you know, our show, we're in America, and a lot of people listening, we didn't live through that, you know, and though we can connect to it in the documentary or reading, you know, it's difficult, I think, to really place yourself in that. But I'm curious, like that time, that place, what it felt like. What do you think it was that led to the Pistols being almost inevitable?
I see what you're getting at. It was a time where people were looking for a change. You know, they'd been glam rock. You know, most people have not been and gone, but in England, as soon as anybody does well, they go to the States or go on tour around the world. So that creates a bit of a void. We were all hip to, you know, Bowie and Mott Hoople and the Faces, and then also in my crowd, the Velvet Underground, stuff like that, which wasn't necessarily accessible. There were other bands going on which we hated, like Barclay James Harvest and Yes and Genesis, which was very Shakespearean. In fact, I even saw a quote from who's a keyboard player in Yes, Rick Wakeman.
Yes,
right, and he said thank God punk came along, because they was all playing all the stuff, but it weren't about nothing. You know, it was Shakespearean. He's got that play Much Ado About Nothing, and we just wanted to cut to the chase a little bit more. I personally, with my music, went back to all the bands I liked in the 60s, you know, like the Kinks, the Who, and the Yardbirds, and the Small Faces. That's what kind of rocked my boat. And I've always liked Tamla Motown and stuff as well. But everybody in the band had a different set of influences. John didn't like so much of that. He liked people like Captain Beefheart, which I liked, and Can, which I liked. But then he liked Van de Graaff, Generator, and Hawkwind, which I thought was hippie shit. You know, so, but it's kind of all in the mix somehow.
Yeah.
Distilled in a sort of 3.5 minute rock, simple rock format. We came out of our own shop, which was the antithesis of what was supposedly going on in the King's Road at the time. We all ended up there for our own individual reasons, but it was a sort of a common breeding ground. He didn't put us together, but he helped us. And I think if it wasn't for Malcolm, nobody would have heard of us. But if it wasn't for us, nobody would have heard of him either. So there was quite a symbiotic relationship going on. You know, and it was Steve and Paul's band, and Steve's like one of the most leery, kind of streetwise blokes around. He had the spirit of the band, but John came along and he had the majority, not all, but the majority of the lyrics, which kind of put the gut feeling that we had into words.
Well, you know, and it's amazing to think about that going all the way back, the release of this documentary. But also, man, I'm so excited you're hitting the road here in the States with the Pistols and Frank Carter on vocals. How did, you know, you've played some shows with him already. How did Frank come into the picture for this?
Well, basically, we was talking about touring. The manager we got out of LA suggested somebody. I didn't think it was a good idea. Nobody wanted to tour with John. We've run out of road with John. Good luck to him. He's doing his thing, but he's too tricky for his own good, with us anyway. Anyway, somebody else was suggested, and I'm sitting at home by myself on Pans 3 on the phone chatting to the manager in the States, and all of a sudden, my son had come in. I hadn't heard him come in, and he overheard. And he's going, "No, no, no! Do you get that? Do you get them? You'll be in a laughing stock." I won't say it was, but I wasn't keen on that either in the first place. I said, "Look, I'll have to call you back." And I said to my boy Lou, "Sorry," I said, "Who do you think we should get?" And he said, "You should get Frank Carter." And I said, "Well, do you know him?" And he said, "Well, him and his older brother had a band several years ago called Dead, and they'd supported Frank on tour, and they said he's a great bloke, got his number." I said, "Well, call him up, let's go and have a coffee." So I went and had a coffee with him. I liked him, suggested I had a play with him and Paul Cook, just the three of us. I didn't want too many people to know what was going on, so I played rhythm guitar. I can get by, I'm not Steve, but it was nothing. And we told Steve, and he went, "All right then." So we didn't try anybody else out. You got Frank. He was just the right guy. You know?
Well, yeah, I mean, he's...
Also, I will tell you this. In the meantime, he was playing with his band at the Rattlesnakes, and he did 2 sold-out nights at the Roundhouse in London. They're quite big gigs, you know, like 5,000-6,000 people. And I went to see him on one of the nights, and he had this really nice white suit on. But he also organises a mosh pit in a circle mosh pit. I didn't really know what these things were, right, in a crowd. Ladies only, right? So he's got a ladies only mosh pit in the middle of the crowd. And then he took his jacket off and hung it up and dived in, whoosh, and he's in there 5 minutes. But then when he came back, he picked his jacket up and put it back on again and sang the next song. I thought, I like that.
I love that, man. He's an intense front man. And as far as I'm concerned, I think he's a perfect fit for this. You've played some shows with him. You're going to play a lot more with him this year. It seems like that intensity, that showmanship is the perfect thing to bring to the Pistols in 2026.
Yeah. You know, and he's his own man. He's not trying to be John. I mean, obviously the songs go how the songs go, but he pays tribute to us. He brings a whole lot of his own kind of spirit to it. I can't imagine John jumping in the crowd. I can't imagine me jumping in the crowd these days. But, he brings his own fans as well. So it's kind of turned us on to a younger generation of music fans. So it works. It works.
Will there be a ladies-only mosh pit at the Pistols show?
I hope so.
Good. Yes. Well, I can't wait to catch you when you roll through Kansas City, man. And I've had a...
Where are you playing in Kansas City? Do you know the name of the place?
The Uptown Theater.
All right. Check.
Beautiful.
Is that all right?
Beautiful, beautiful old theater in downtown Kansas City. It's going to be perfect. It's going to be perfect, man. And it'll be packed and plenty of people probably ready to do the ladies only mosh pit, man.
Okay. All right. Well, it's a modern world. You don't know who you find in ladies only mosh pit these days. But
that's right. That's right. Well, and I can't wait for the show, and I've been talking to a lot of friends about it, and getting people, everyone, is excited about it that I talk to. I run into a couple people who go, well, it's not the real Pistols. And I'm like, no. This is Glenn, it's Steve, it's Paul. This is the Sex Pistols. I'm sure you've heard it too, man. How do you shut something like that down?
If people want to say that, I say come down and check it out if you want to. But it's hard to. It's not with John. I totally agree. But you just never get it with John. So this is the best you're going to get. But it's pretty good, and it's bit different. Take it or leave it. But my advice is come and have fun. And also, we did some little gigs to help a club out in London with Frank and to see what the reaction was. And Paul's wife came along, and first or second night, she said to me as we come off stage, she said, I've seen you loads of times with John. It's the first time you guys have ever come off stage with a smile on your face. So that says quite a lot.
Yeah, that's it, man. That's it. Well, you've been doing this a long time.
We want to have fun. It's music. Even though it might have quite a lot of importance and, what's the word? The raison d'etre or stuff. But it should be fun. Rock and roll should be fun. So,
that's it, man. That's it. Well, and that might be the answer to this question, but you've been doing this a long time and with some amazing bands and artists, and now you're a documentarian and you're staying incredibly busy and active. What keeps you pushing forward to do this, as opposed to just sitting back and kind of glorying in the nostalgia?
Hey, for a start, sitting back. I mean, although I've done all right, I'm not a multi millionaire. I can't afford to not work. It's work. So that's one thing. I like playing. I like getting out and playing. I like to live in the moment, doff my cap to the past and look to the future. I mean, I think you're kind of as good as the song you got on the go that might come out in a couple of months' time. I'm always more interested in that. I'm always doing stuff for myself. Yes, it's not the Sex Pistols, but it's not supposed to be. But I keep getting sidetracked by things that are kind of... I put an album out about 2.5-3 years ago, which I was very pleased with. It's called Consequences Coming, and it deals with what was going on in England and other places around the world. It was very well received, but I got a phone call to go and play with Blondie, and I could hardly say no, really. So I didn't get to go and gig it as much as possible. And as soon as the Blondie thing happened, did a few things, and then the Pistols thing came about. So, you just have to make a choice, really.
Well, and I imagine making that choice for a lot of those things is, am I going to have fun? Is this going to make me happy?
Well, yeah, and even it's been a bit quiet this year, and I had some personal things to deal with, which I'm not going to go on about. But I started writing a bit more a few months ago, and then I bumped into Andrew Innes from Primal Scream. And I said, what are you up to? He said, well, we're going to the studio. I said, I'll come play some bass for you if you want. And he went, oh, all right. So I went in the studio with him. I played bass on about 9 songs in one afternoon, songs I'd never heard before. And I like this stuff. I'd done a little bit with them a few years back. It, just those little, my dad used to say, little fish are sweet. And to do something like that is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
And, you know, and what I like about being a musician as well, you know, everybody knows all the hit records people have had or nearly had and million sellers and all that. But most musicians will get together with a mate or two who's got an idea and go in a studio or go in a rehearsal room and have a go at doing something for the hell of it. Not for the money, for the hell of it. And it might take off and it might be really good and nothing happens for all kinds of reasons. But there must be loads of drawers with cassette tapes in and, you know, burn yourself CDs or MP3s these days where people are having a go at something for fun and to try and do something artistically. I think that's why I got on well with Clem. Clem was always playing with different people, you know, and it, he wasn't on his high horse about, oh, I'll only play Madison Square Gardens, because you're lucky if you do get to play Madison Square Gardens all the time. But it's just saying yes with a little bit of consideration, and sometimes they lead to other things. So, and you're keeping your hand in, you're playing. It keeps your chops up, you know.
Are there any new bands? I mean, you know, you talk about seeing Frank Carter and the Rattlesnakes sell out the Roundhouse, which is amazing. Are there new bands that you've come across where you're
stuff around, but you know, I'm a lot older now. I've done all that years and years and years ago when you would go and check out everything that was in the back of the Melody Maker. And lots of times you're wasting your time, but you never know. Yeah. In fact, I remember in the punk days when we were looking for you know, like-minded punk bands, I was friendly with Bernard Rhodes, who went on to manage The Clash. And we saw playing somewhere right over the other side of London, this band called the Teenage Rebels, right? And we went to see them, and they weren't even a kind of a bad rockabilly band. They was dreadful. And after the gig, Bernard went up to the singer and said, you know, what's this? We've come all the way over London. You're really old. You're not teenagers, and you're certainly not rebellious. And the singer guy said, well, that's it. We're rebelling against teenagers. And for the first time in his life, Bernie was speechless. But, you know, we've done all that. There's stuff around. Then I tend to go and see my friends play or maybe offspring of my kids, my friends' kids and things in support. But, yeah, but I did do a thing in about a month ago in New York. There was a Clem Burke tribute show, and loads of different people got up and did a couple of Blondie numbers or something to do with what Clem had played, and it was a great vibe there. And there was loads of people that I hadn't really come across and played with before or hung out with, sort of standing outside having a cigarette, and I was chatting to this bloke. I had no idea who he was, and it turned out he was the singer from Bogo Bordello. You know, I thought he was a bit kind of funny. And when I did this thing, I was going to, Kathy Ballantyne sort of half organized it from the go-go. So I said, well, you can play with me. And we didn't have a drummer. And all of a sudden, Frank Farrar walked in. I said, do you want to play on a few songs with me? And he went, love to. So I like that.
It's, I love when that happens, man. Yeah, I had a buddy, I think at that show in New York, who went, and you know, he talked about seeing you on stage with Mike Ness and Jesse Malin, and said it was just like a really magical moment.
Yeah, it was good. There was a lot of love in the room. Yeah.
All right, Glenn, last question, and you've mentioned John a couple of times, but, you know, a lot of people on social media have noticed the Riot Fest lineup in America this year with Sex Pistols and Public Image on the lineup. Have you crossed paths like that before at festivals?
And then, to be honest, I think we're playing different days, so okay. I don't think there's going to be too much kind of running into each other. I did nearly cross paths with them at Cruel World Festival a couple of years back. I was playing with Blondie, but, you know, I'm a lover, not a fighter, but I also got good writer, so I'm not worried.
That's it, man. That's it. Well, and listen, I cannot wait for this tour, this documentary, everything. It's fun. I mean, it's great. It's historic. And it's what I think what excites me is that, like you said, you're not sitting and resting, right? You are pushing yourself forward. You're still working.
Well, there you go. A Rolling Stone gathers no moss.
That's it.
You just cry around the whiskers.
That's it, man. Glenn Matlock, thank you so much for hanging tonight. Congrats on this new documentary, I Was a Teenage Sex Pistol. Congrats on the tour with the Sex Pistols and Frank Carter and everything to come. Everyone, go watch this documentary now. Grab tickets to see Glenn and the Pistols on the road here in the States later this year. It kicks off on September 11th in Dallas, and you don't want to miss it. Glenn, thank you so much for being here. I can't wait to see you on the road, and if there's ever a chance to do this again, hopefully we can make it happen.
There you go. All right. Thanks for having us on, chat. All right, man, there you go.
That wraps up this episode of Loudwire Nights on Demand. Stay caught up with everything happening in the world of rock and metal on the Loudwire app and at loudwire.com.